Wash your hands, cough in your sleeve. Don't you even dare to sneeze, cause if you do, you'll likely be quarantined. Quarantine. We're begging for you to be lifted soon. So we can all leave our rooms. Quarantine.
Hi. Hi, everybody. I don't know whether my app was working initially. I'm sitting at home for the first time using a remote app. So I guess for a while it wasn't working. I guess you guys heard that we had a new introductory song called Quarantine, a parody of Dolly Parton's Jolene, written by Bourbon County, Kentucky middle school principal Travis Earlywine. I had an intro that I went through that I'm going to skip now because we have a very special guest, Akil Bello, who's had an amazing trajectory. He's going to be talking about standardized testing here in New York State and throughout the country in this very special time of coronavirus and quarantine. Many teachers are struggling with remote learning. Kids are struggling, too, and parents with what they should be doing to get educated. And luckily, the state has now canceled the state standardized tests, as many others have. I'm going to introduce Akil, who's going to talk about what's happening with standardized testing here in New York State and throughout the country, and also talk about his amazing trajectory of his career. Akil, are you there?
I am. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm sorry. The app wasn't working for the first few minutes, so I don't know what the listeners heard. But we are sitting at home using a special app that we've never heard used before. So apologies, and be patient with us, and just as you have to be patient with our teachers and our kids in this extraordinary time. So as I mentioned, you've had a really interesting and amazing career. Do you want to first introduce yourself and talk about, the trajectory of where you've gone in the last few years and what you've done?
Sure. Thanks a lot. So I started in test prep while I was in college, looking for a part-time job. I ended up being a test prep teacher for pretty much every admissions test you can imagine, SAT, ACT, GMAT, GRE, LSAT. ISEE, SHSAT, so basically all the major admissions tests. I also did a little bit of tutoring and test prep for regions and statewide assessments, although I didn't do as much work there. After 13 years at Princeton Review, I left and started my own company. I did that for 11 years, and my company focused on creating partnerships with under-resourced schools, with nonprofits that served underrepresented students to help them get the same quality test preparation that families of means were able to secure. After doing that for 11 years, I left Bell Curves, and I returned to Princeton Review actually as the Director of Equity and Access, and most recently I've taken a role at Fair Test as Director of Advocacy and Advancement. So I've spent a long time, in the space of testing and admissions, sometimes helping people pass the test, sometimes advocating for more understanding and reasonable use of the test. Actually, I guess all the time advocating for more reasonable understanding and use of the test. And that's what brings me here to today in this wild and crazy world of Corona. So That's the story in a nutshell. I guess the other part of this that's worth talking about is what's going on in New York itself, where, as of right now, it looks like the tests are suspended throughout the state. Certainly the English exam is. I actually haven't double-checked whether the math is confirmed as suspended for this year. No, the math was confirmed as suspended for this year as well. So in New York State, there'll be no statewide assessments as of right now. And in much of the country, that's happening as well. there's not a federal decree about suspension, but what's happening is, since most statewide assessments are mandated by federal law, there had to be a waiver from the federal government for states not to give that test for many states. And so as that waiver came a day or so ago, more and more states are going to officially announce that they're suspending their tests for the year. So that's the state of things for statewide assessments right now.
Now, several people are concerned about the fact that the Board of Regents have not announced anything about the Regents exams. So New York State is one of only, I think, about 12 states now that has high school exit exams that you have to pass in order to graduate from high school in about 4 to 6 subjects. And people are very nervous about that. Do you have any thoughts about, I mean, at the same time, the Board of Regents was going through a process, including forming a task force and holding public forums about whether they should alter their graduation requirements. Because, as I said, fewer and fewer states over time have these mandated high-stakes exams required to graduate from high school. Do you have any thoughts about that and where the state is going with that and whether at this point they should be canceling the Regents exams as well?
So, I mean, I think that states are in a strange conundrum, right? Because we don't really know what the next 4 months is going to hold. So most states, most departments of education are trying to play the game of, or trying to hedge between an abundance of caution around health and, you know, and being able to deliver a normal year. So are there seniors that still need to take the test? That's of a concern. And so these things are all being sort of, I bet, you know, discussed on a day-to-day basis, and we'll find out more as things get closer. I would imagine that something is going to be put in place. There has been no announcement that I've seen about official plans for Regents. But my bet is there won't be a world in which a student who was on track to get a Regents diploma, who was counting on that last administration, a June administration or August administration, to get that Regents diploma, wouldn't have some opportunity to do that, wouldn't have some means to do that. That's probably what the state is looking into right now. How do we ensure that, you know, a student graduating in 2020 has the opportunity to have the diploma that they were on track for? And right. So something will be put in place. Even if they cancel the test, I'm sure they'll say, you know, we'll award, you know, cancel the test with a student who has 8 of the 9 tests required for an advanced Regents diploma. We're just going to go ahead and waive the 9th one this year.
Right.
I would imagine things like that are going to happen.
I hope they do more than that. I hope they waive them permanently, but I know that that's a lot to ask before they go through this whole process of reconsideration. I guess my hope is that this accelerates that trend of dropping high-stakes exit exams, because the research shows that I've looked at is that they do not lead to higher achievement or college readiness, but higher dropout rates and higher incarceration rates, especially for kids of color.
I thought
it was interesting. Yeah, go on. Sorry.
I was just going to say, the Regents are an interesting test in the landscape of testing that I look at. Because they're actually not particularly high stakes as I would define high stakes. Now, I don't dispute any of the research you brought on. That's all concerning. But when you look at, let's just balance it against the SHSAT. The SHSAT is one day, if you do well on that day, you have these opportunities open to you. If you don't do well, all of those opportunities are shut down. The Regents aren't like that, right? The Regents are, you can take it multiple times. You have 4 years, essentially, maybe 6, because some places are starting in 7th and 8th grade. You have, you know, almost 6 years to take 4 or 5 tests required for graduation. So the stakes and the penalties are far lower than things that are somewhat lower. You know, so in terms of, like, the landscape of high-stakes testing, that one is fairly low, which is one of the reasons I believe it doesn't get as much ire.
Yeah, I would disagree with that, because the SHSAT, which we will get to later, is an admissions test to a small number of specialized high schools in New York City. And kids can succeed in high school and in college and in life without getting into that small number of highly selective schools. If you don't pass your Regents, you don't get a high school diploma, which is a severe problem for kids in terms of being able to even make a living in this city and state. So I consider it as, you know, serious a problem, if not much more serious a problem than the SHSAT, even though you have many times that you can take the test over. I know kids who, for example, have taken the math test over and over and have not passed. And parents with means can actually send their kids to colleges out of state where they don't even care or notice that you don't have a Regents diploma. But if you want to send your kid to a New York State school, it's very difficult to do that without a Regents diploma. So I consider that as serious a problem, if not more than this SHSAT, because, there are lots of ways to succeed without going to those, you know, small number, I think there are 8 specialized high schools in New York City, and graduate from high school and go on to a good college.
Let me clarify that, right? So my point is that the way in which the test is administered, right, in which the high-stakesness of that one test administration and the penalties for doing well or not, right, is much less severe than many other tests. The volume of the impact of Regents is much greater, absolutely. And while and also sort of in terms of the less, so I think that there's a different problem there that for Regents than for a lot of the other high stakes tests, and I think that disaggregating that is important in the conversation. You know, so there's a different volume of problem and a different level of problem for those two tests, but yeah, they all present an issue because they all present a hurdle that will remove some opportunities.
True. What was interesting is last night I saw on Twitter that Randy Weingarten has come out with a proposal. I don't know whether you've seen it or not, that schools throughout the country that are trying to do remote learning should instead assign a capstone project to their students, which is similar to... Yeah, which is similar to what we have for a relatively limited number of high schools in New York City and New York State that do performance-based assessments instead of the Regents exams, where they have to do a project at the end of the year in all of the 4 major subjects, and it's done over the course of 4 years in high school in order to graduate. And those high schools find that this is an important educational opportunity and learning experience for kids. And I think that's an interesting concept, which I'm going to try to get Randy Weingarten on the show to discuss in future if I can.
I think you're talking
can you
about
tell us
the
a little
performance,
bit, you're performance-based
about the performance
assessment
standard
schools.
Consortium, right?
Yes, exactly, yep, exactly. And I think they only have to take one Regent exam, which is the English, but they have to move towards that system, they have to get apply and get an agreement from the State Board of Education in order to be exempt from the other Regents exams. And what the studies show is actually those high school students, when they graduate, do better in college, are more persistent, and graduate on time at higher rates than kids who take the Regents in New York City. What's going on with the College Board and ACT exams? Because a lot of people are very confused about this.
I think what's going on with all exams is the same thing. Given that you cannot gather large numbers of children in a room, all of those large gatherings are being rescheduled and reconsidered how they can deliver them. So each different testing organization, and that's part of the mess of testing in this country, is that so many of these tests are administered by private entities with no government oversight or coordination. So SAT and ACT are each run by different organizations, so they're making their own decisions. ACT recently rescheduled their April 4th exam to June 13th. The SAT has canceled the May administration of the test. So it's created a little bit of concern for students, which is rightfully understood for those, you know, in 11th grade who had plans to take the test in April or in May, now have to reassess those plans and consider what that does to the schedule they had in mind for applying to college. And so it's creating a bit of a concern. AP exams have also been canceled because there's no school. Right? But AP came out with a solution, and this is also a College Board test. So it's curious as to see, you know, I could foresee a world where if this extends too long, this could potentially be something that they extend to the SAT. But the AP's exams are now going to be delivered online as shorter assessments than they normally were. But they're now going to be delivered online, and students can take them at home if they have the right computer set up.
Right. They're going to be 45 minutes, mm-hmm. and they're going to be written responses, short written responses is what I've heard.
Correct.
And
no
somehow,
multiple choice.
Yeah, instead of multiple choice, and somehow they're going to grade them, and we don't know whether they're going to be graded through machines or through human beings, which is concerning.
Well, the grading won't change from what it's been. You know, the grading is not going to change from what it's been in the past in all likelihood, right? So I believe
if it used to be more multiple choice, obviously multiple choice is easier to do with machines, the grading, mm-hmm. whereas written short answers or long answers, I think, is more difficult for machines to grade, and in fact, it's not that reliable.
The free response questions have been right. there in the past. So what they did was essentially they just took the multiple choice off and they kept the free response what was there, the way I understand it. So it's not a new portion of the test. It is a slight alteration or kind of a major alteration of what was there. So I don't remember the specific breakdown. I don't do a whole lot with APs, but let's pretend that it was 60% multiple choice and 40% free response. Now they're only right. keeping the 40%. So the grading system that was in place was probably something. So most of the ways these things are graded is that they send, you know, they have readers come in and they give them the student responses and they just spend weeks on end reading, right? I don't foresee that changing very much because that's very easy to do remotely.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and we, you know, I know that you have issues about the SATs, especially, and I assume the ACTs as well, as how much they should be relied upon in terms of an admission standard for more and more colleges are moving towards admission systems in which the SAT is not obligatory. It's optional. And do you have thoughts about that? I mean, how meaningful that is as a measure for admissions to college and whether it should be required for kids to take
absolutely.
The SAT or the ACT to apply to colleges?
I mean, absolutely. So I think that with all of these tests, all of these high-stakes admissions tests specifically, their value in predicting who's going to succeed is much less than what we've assigned them. So if we take the SAT, for instance, most research shows that it contributes somewhere between 2 and 8% to the prediction of success in first year at college. And when we juxtapose that with how much time, energy, and money goes into preparing for, thinking about, using all of that stuff that's tied to the SAT for that 2%, that's insane, right? There are colleges that are weighing SAT scores and GPAs as if they were equivalent, as if 4 years of work are equivalent to one or two Saturdays in which you spend 3 hours answering a limited number of questions around two topics. So... Mm-hmm. The amount of weight in the admissions process that are assigned to standardized testing is generally problematic in this country, right? The SAT and the ACT being sort of the bigger ones, so the most easy to point to flaws in the system. You know, if you carry that even further beyond admission, so start with one, we are giving it equal weight to 4 years of actual classroom work, which should not be done, not only because it doesn't make any logical sense, it doesn't pass the sniff test, but also statistics don't hold that up, right? So why would we give that equal weight? And then when we go on beyond that to assign that a monetary value by awarding quote-unquote merit aid on the basis of SATs and ACT cutoffs is also insane, right? So the way in which we are using these tests and assigning value to these tests is hugely problematic, right? So Fair Tests, the organization that I work for, maintains a list of the colleges that are test optional, which means that they have decided that their admissions process does not need a required SAT. And because colleges are generally independent institutions, right, private colleges can do what they want. State colleges have to follow state law, but other than that, they don't have to coordinate with other states. Right? So each college system essentially makes its own decisions about what's required in their admissions process and what's valuable to them. Some colleges require essays, some do not. Some colleges require, you know, extracurricular activities or AP classes, some do not. Well, why wouldn't colleges also decide whether or not they wanted to require SAT and ACT scores? Mm-hmm. And so there's a growing movement which started in the 60s with Bowdoin and Bates colleges somewhere in the late 60s, deciding that they were going to make the SAT and ACT an optional component of their admissions process. So if a student felt that that was representative of who they were, much like sending the essay on your, you know, service trip to Peru or whatever it is you do, right, they would make the SAT and the ACT also optional, and you could send it if you wanted to or choose not to send it. And as of right now, the list of bachelor-granting degree programs that are test optional is approaching 1,100 colleges in the United States.
1,100 out of how many? What kind of percentage is that, do you know?
So it's about a third, approaching a third. The number of colleges in the United States is a weird thing to count because it depends on how you choose to define college when you're counting.
Right.
You know, if you're only thinking about four-year institutions, that's not quite right because there are a number of two-year institutions that grant bachelor degrees or what is thought of as two-year institutions, community colleges, right, that grant mm-hmm. bachelor degrees. So our list includes bachelor degree granting programs.
So it's still less than half, but it is a growing number of college degree institutions. And it spiked in the last. I mean, one of the other reasons that maybe you can talk about that makes these college admissions tests unfair and discriminatory is the fact that people who can afford to hire companies, test prep companies, or even test prep tutors do tend to do better over time than the kids who can't afford that. Originally, the College Board used to claim that preparation did no bet. There was no way to prep for the College Board test for the SAT, and that you could, you know, hire a test prep company or a tutor and you would do no better. But that has been pretty much disproven and even admitted by the College Board itself, right, at this point?
So that's the amazing part of the arc of my career. I started in 1990 at Princeton Review. I would walk into a room full of adults and say, the SAT is crap, I can teach you how to beat it. And the room would fall out. People would lose their minds. They're like, what are you talking about? You can't beat the SAT. There are no tricks for the test. People would be, you know, floored. And then you show them a few things as to how to beat the test. And, you know, and eyes were opening, you know, the clouds parted, lights shine. People were amazed at those sort of things. These days, I walk into a room, I say that you can beat the SAT, nobody blinks. they're like, yeah, how much time is it and how much money is it going to take me? Right? So there's been a huge shift in the perception of these tests. When we started, mm-hmm. when I started in this industry, you're right, College Board was putting out study after study, and to a lesser extent ACT, but the testing agencies were fighting hard to dispute claims that scores could be substantially moved through test preparation, right? And the test prep companies were marketing that, right? Princeton Review would give 100 points guaranteed, right? Today, you can go to College Board's website, and they will tell mm-hmm. you that 20 hours on Khan Academy can get you 115 points on your SAT. So they've gone from disputing that number to using that number as a marketing tool, right? Which is fascinating to me to what it says about the SAT. If a mere 20 hours in an online, like video, non-interactive, you know, self-study thing can get you 115 points improvement, what value is there to this test? So when you see a student's SAT score, does that mean they've had their 20-odd hours of prep or they didn't? Because that's really mm-hmm. all that's telling you if we know that that 20 hours, you know, will give you 100 points. And if 20 hours on a computer gets you 100 points, what does 20 hours with an actual teacher get you?
Well, so, what did you promise your clients at this, you know, when you were either at Princeton Review or your own company? What did you promise them, or what did you experience in terms of improvements on scores yourself?
Oh, I've seen all of it. I've seen 300, 400 points improvements, mm-hmm. right? And I think the thing that most people don't seem to wrap their head around with standardized testing is it's testing. If you can test for it, you can prep for it. There's no test right. you can't prepare for. You know, maybe, you know, I don't know, I can't prepare for a blood test. But I probably can, right? You know, it depends on what outcome I want. If I want my blood to show up as sugared, I'll drink a lot of sugary drinks. So there's no test you can't prepare for. So the argument that there is this test testing academic things in a very particular way, but somehow there is no way to improve your preparation for that, just doesn't make any sense, right? So the real question around test preparation is actually, how do you define test preparation? Is test preparation, you know, 6 hours on a computer, or is it 50 hours with a tutor who has 30 years of experience in standardized test prep and mm-hmm. access to all the released and not publicly released previous tests and can give you 100 SAT tests to work on so that by the time you go into the test, you've seen every type of question they're going to ask you, every iteration and nuance and subtlety of the exam, and nothing is a surprise anymore. Right,
so can you talk a little bit about that, the unreleased part, the released and unreleased SATs? I mean, I think that's fascinating to people. How do you get your hands on those?
So let me say unreleased a little bit better. College Board, if you take the SAT, you could, for a small fee of $18, 3 of the 7 public administrations of the year, you can purchase a copy of your test, of the test form you took. Not the, you know, not your booklet with the markups in it, but if I took the March test, the May SAT, let's say, I can send College Board an extra $18 for the pleasure of getting the questions back, right? Now, mm-hmm. we won't get into how weird it is to take a test and never be able to review your performance, right? Like, which is happens 4 of the 7 times per year. But on the 3 times, you can actually purchase the test booklet. Those purchase test booklets, which is called the QAS, the question and answer service, is technically only available to students who've taken the test, right? Now, as a test prep company proprietor, as a tutor, I can just ask my students for those tests. So while College mm-hmm. Board has published 10 tests online, right, they've given maybe, let's say, they're probably 15, 20 QAS forms that are in the ether somewhere. As a test prep tutor, I know where all those things live. Most of the people you know, your average student does not know where to get the actual QASs from the SAT. So that gives somewhat of an advantage to a student who's working with me, who can immediately have access to highly reliable practice tests that have been administered by the College Board.
So those are the unreleased tests. In other words, the ones you called unreleased are the ones that students
the QAS is, when I say unreleased, I really meant like not readily available to the public. There are actually tests that are unreleased, that they gave this test in March. They will not deliver it to the public anytime soon. They will not make it available to anyone, whether you took the test or not. And that brings up a different issue of cheating. In China, a lot of test forms have been compromised. They'll give, not in China, actually a lot of it has been in China, but overseas there is a fairly regular system of compromising exams. Because College Board, what they do is with tests, what all testing agencies tend to do, you know, Pearson and the SHSAT do it as well. They will take a test, they will give it, you know, in 2019, they'll hold on to it for a couple of years, and then maybe give it again in 2021. So if someone gets hold of the 2019 exam and a student preparing for the 2021 exam gets a hold of that, they have now seen the actual exam.
Right. I've heard that sometimes they use them in the same year overseas. So they'll use the questions first in China, and then Chinese students will put them online so that kids in other countries can see the test that they will be given. And this has been a repeated problem with the College Board that has been reported on and over the years. It seems to have gotten worse, probably with the expansion of the internet and more Chinese students taking these exams. But there seems to be a perpetual problem with the security of these tests.
It's one of the reasons that ACT is actually only doing computer-based testing internationally, because they've had to cancel their exams in a number of countries. I believe Korea was one of the last ones before they decided to go completely computer-based for the international ACT exam.
And
so
why
there's
does
been
that
cheating
help?
Scandals. Because there's no test booklet for somebody to get a hold of and stuff inside their jacket.
Huh.
So how can they, you know, steal a complete test form? Right? It's much more difficult.
But they can still remember, presumably, the questions they've been asked. At this point, I'd
like
to... Go on.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that there's definitely ways to... Like, with any exam, there are ways to cheat if people are sophisticated and dedicated enough to try to cheat. The question is, how does the test administrator balance increased costs for security against keeping the cost and their profit, you know, reasonable, so that, you know, with those security concerns. So College Board could write 27 more test forms every year. That would increase the cost of the test. Right? So then that's the nonprofit organizations with $1 billion every year, you would think they could absorb some of the cost of writing more test forms.
Ray, College Board is an extraordinarily wealthy organization, and even apart from selling the AP tests, which now they made kids sign up for early in the year, also sells student data and makes about $100 million a year off of selling student data, but that's a whole other issue. I just wanted to let people know that if your child did sign up for the AP exam, there is a way to get a refund now. They're not making it very easy to figure out how, but you can call the College Board and ask for a refund. This is Leahni Haimson on WBAI FM 99.5 with Talk Out of Seoul. Now we open up the phone lines. Please call in with your questions for Akhil or your concerns at 212-209-2877. We would like to talk about testing more, but if you have other issues that you're experiencing with online learning, remote learning, Please feel free to call in with your concerns as well. We'd love to hear from you. Akhil, now I'd like to really tackle the most controversial issue in New York City education before the coronavirus descended on us, and that's the SHE. Excuse me. For people outside New York City, you may not know, but New York City is the only district in the entire country that bases admissions to any of its schools specifically on one sole high-stakes exam called the SAT. And I believe there are eight high schools in New York City that base admissions solely on the results of that one exam. And it is the ultimate high-stakes exam. Nothing else is looked at. And it's gotten a lot of attention, especially recently, because the number of Black and Latino kids who get into the specialized high schools has been going down over time and is now very small compared to the number of students in our school system, which make up the majority of kids. And the mayor came out with a proposal endorsed by the chancellor, Carranza, saying that we should move away from this system, that it was essentially unfair and discriminatory and led to highly unfair, inequitable results in terms of the kids who got into these schools and had the opportunity to attend these elite schools. That caused a firestorm among many parents and elected officials. I'd say the predominant anger was expressed by the Asian community, whose kids do get into these schools at much higher rates. Do you want to talk a little bit about the SHSAT and whether you believe they should be eliminated and whether the city should move to a different system, or what are your thoughts about this issue?
Absolutely. So forget my thoughts. Let's start with this. The standards for educational and psychological testing that were co-developed by the American Educational Research Association, the American Psychological Association, the National Council for Measurement in Education. So the three major associations for the creation of and administration of testing. These three organizations came together and set standards. New York City is in violation for their science schools of the recommendations of the scientists who write tests. That in and of itself should be a reason to change the system. Pearson says, don't use test as a sole measure. College Board says, don't use test as a sole measure. Everyone who writes and creates tests, every psychometrician will tell you, don't use test as a sole measure. So for its science schools, New York City, and in part New York State, since they're controlling the law, have decided to violate science. That in and of itself makes no sense. So the system needs to change. It's a bad, unscientific system of making admissions decisions. To compound that problem, the SHSAT is a, from all information I've been able to gather, from all research that's out there, it's a bad test. It is fairly arbitrary in how it is constructed and its adherence to the standards of psychological and psychometric testing seems to be suspect at best. Right? The rationale for – so one of the quirks of this test is if you score – let's – there are 57 math questions, 57 reading questions, of which – most of them are scored. Let's just make it simple. Say there are 50 score math questions and 50 scored reading questions. If you got 40 math correct and 40 reading correct, that would mean you have 80 points. However, if another student got 50 math correct and 30 reading correct, they would also have 80 points. The student with the 50 would get in, whereas the student with the 40s would not. How are you determining that one of those students is better than the other when they have the exact same number of points? that type of scoring is oddly quirky. And it seems to me that much of the SHSAT is designed simply to create random distinctions at the top end, right? They want to be able to assign, you know, 900 seats to STI, and then the next 600 to Bronx Science, and the next 600, et cetera, on down the line. So they've built in oddities, aren't real distinctions between test takers. Right? So who benefits from this becomes the question. What's that?
Yeah. So in other words, it's very arbitrary in its construction and very unusual. One thing that you mentioned on Twitter the other day, which I thought was fascinating, is that there is no technical report that you could find online anywhere. And I also know that the test has never been independently assessed for either racial or gender bias. And there are very good reasons to think that it is especially gender biased, because girls tend to do better in their grades and tend to do better on the state test scores, and yet they get into the specialized high schools via this test at much lower levels. And in fact, John Taylor, who works at Hunter College, did his PhD dissertation showing that grades, actual high school grades, are a much better determinant of how you're going to do at these schools than the SHSAT. And in fact, girls who do get into these schools do far better than boys with the same test scores. So, but can you talk a little bit about the technical reports? At one point, this test is produced by Pearson, which has its own issues, as we know, and its own controversies. And the DOE did an RFP and said they were going to start contracting out with a different company to create this exam, this very controversial, unreliable exam, and yet they ended up signing with Pearson again for reasons I don't understand. But the issue of the technical report is one that most people don't really understand. Could you explain why that's so important?
So, yeah, what that essentially means, so almost every single major admissions or assessment test produces a research report that says, here's how we constructed the test. Here's what the standards are that the test is assessing. Here's how questions are designed, expected to perform, actually performed in the last year or three. So that gives a lot of the details of the test that allows you to understand whether it is a well-designed assessment, how the scoring works, how performance on different questions has played out. So all of those technical parts of the test that will allow me to say things like, what's the top, you know, what's the score range of it? What's the highest score? What's the bottom score? How does the test function differently for different test forms? The SHSAT, I believe every year when they administer the test, I want to say the number is 18 different test forms. So they are giving 18 different versions of this test every single year. Are all 18 versions
comparable?
That's
amazing.
Comparable? Yes.
That is amazing.
Queens,
I never knew that.
Is getting a much harder test than Brooklyn? Right?
Wow.
You know, is 88 questions in Brooklyn converting to the same scale score as 88 questions in Queens? If it's getting an easier test, then potentially not. So all of these things, so the technical report in a certain way allows the test maker to say, look, we've done our due diligence, and we didn't just throw an arbitrary set of questions onto a piece of paper, because it's really easy to write a bad test. And if we want to look at an example of bad test questions, just Google Pearson or Google New York State Assessments and the pineapple, right? There was that pineapple controversy that came down, which there was a nonsense passage on the test, and no one could actually answer those questions. Well, one of the problems with not having technical reports is you don't know how often that kind of thing is occurring. They never release actual questions from the SHSAT. And in the handbook, which they release with two sample tests, right, from I believe it was 18 to 19, they changed a question in the handbook because it was poorly written. Now, they've had months to prepare the handbook. They knew handbook was going to be in public, so that's arguably going to be their most edited and proofed test that they publish.
Mm-hmm.
And that had errors in it, and that almost consistently has errors in it. So we're supposed to trust that Pearson is producing 18 forms every year that are consistently good, although they'll give us no data to support that. That's
again, this is Lainey Hameson. Yeah, let me just again remind people this is Lainey Hameson with Talk Out of School on WBAI FM. We would like to open up the phone line, so please call in if you have questions at 212-209-2877. Akhil mentioned the pineapple. It's one of my small claims to fame is that I actually broke the story of the pineapple because my son happened to be in that grade taking that test at that time. And online, I was getting a lot of messages, both emails and on Facebook, about this ridiculous question that related to a race between a pineapple and a hare. And I started looking online, and it turned out this ridiculous reading passage and these questions had been given by Pearson in like five other states before New York. And there was actually a Facebook page that was devoted to this ridiculous reading passage in question where students and parents and teachers were complaining about it. And yet Pearson kept on giving it year after year after year. Absolutely no sense. And it really upset a lot of students because they didn't know how to answer this ridiculous question. And after we wrote about it on our blog, it got picked up by the New York City papers and then the national media. And the state did exclude that question and the responses from the exam. But it became something of a symbol of the absurdity of standardized exams in general, and I think contributed to the understanding of many people across the country how irrational and unaccountable these tests are and the test makers themselves, the testing companies. We do have a caller on the line. WBAI, you're on the air. Can you say your name, where you're calling from, and what your question or concern is?
Yes, my name is Joshua Stepney. I'm the founder of a small nonprofit. I started in Richmond, Virginia, but I'm back up here in the Tri-City area. And my work is focused in helping youth and educators to integrate the learning and trauma healing and into art process and artistic expression as far as history development. The idea is that in my development of the nonprofit, I made a decision that I want to try to be there for students who are dealing with, you know, trouble and issues in testing and other kinds of things. And I want to be a resource for people who are preparing for the testing. I mean, I wanted to see if the speaker could talk a little bit about how emotional preparedness, you know, could help, you know, raise test scores or possibly, you know, support the youth through the process, or, you know, and speak on how someone like me could make my organization and myself available to you know, organizations who are doing testing.
Akhil?
I think I got the question. I heard it was a little bit dropping in and out, so I'm going to do my best to summarize the question and hopefully answer it. So if I'm understanding you properly, you run a nonprofit and you're curious how to support students and other organizations preparing for testing. It sounds like your focus was on emotionally as well as academically. And I think that those are important questions. So I guess the response would be, I guess I have a multi-layered response. First, when performance on standardized tests, let's assume that it is a good standardized test, right? Let's assume that all questions actually make sense, and, you know, because you can't really prepare for the inanity of a pineapple passage. But hopefully that's the minority of the questions that appear on any one test. So we'll just ignore that for now and say, given that these tests, that there is content that needs to be learned for all these assessments, and the better you know that content, the better you will perform. So that would be the starting point, right? That's the most controllable element of this. Understand the content that's on an exam, understand what a student needs to learn, make sure that they know those things. And then on top of that content, because it's one thing to say we're going to test prime numbers, it's a whole other thing to understand how they're going to test prime numbers. So one is understand the content that's going to be tested. Secondarily is understand the way in which that content will be tested. So getting them used to the nuances and quirks of the exam. And then third, and I'm just listing three things, not necessarily in that order. Go ahead, Lindsay.
Yeah, we have to close out. So unfortunately, that's all we have time for today. I know this has been an awkward a show because we've been doing it from home for the first time. This is Lainey Hameson, host of Talk Out of School on WBAI. Akil, thank you so much for being here. I'd love to have you back again sometime to talk about these issues as it evolves. Our show is available now as a podcast if you missed the live version, but please consider becoming a WBA buddy to Talk Out of School by logging into givetowbai.org. I hope you'll join us next Wednesday for another Talk Out of School, where we hope to have teachers and parents talking about what's going on with remote learning. Until then, be careful and be safe. Thanks so much for listening.